tavern. We were all, it was part of stable there. Anyway, it was sold finally, of course, to Don Warner, or Don Warner's family, and they took some of the barns down in back of the house and moved the house back from the road. The barn, one of the barns, was moved by a man by the name of George Melvin. He moved it up the street and towards Canaan, and it's one of those houses along to the left there on the road to Canaan. And that was made from the old barn of the Bushel Tavern. The land beyond Bushnell Tavern, I believe it's called the Stiles Field now.
Oh, yes.
I think that's called it. Yeah. I remember there was a tennis court in there way back. That was that went with the Bushnell Tavern property at that time. And there were tennis courts there. We might go up
Washington
East Street.
Yeah.
At the corner of Sulick Hill Road and Washington East Street. Washington East Street at that time went between the house and a factory which is no longer there. It didn't go up over the hill as it does now.
What kind of a factory was that?
That was at one time a bicycle factory, and it was also a rubber factory at one time. And they had did woodwork there, I believe. They had Salisbury artisans were there at one time. They did various things, but in the early days that I remember, it was a bicycle factory. They made, one thing they made there were bicycle spokes, because we used to see them in the brook there. They were twisted. They were like these, I don't know if you know these, what they call icicles. At Christmas time you put on a tree and they're twisted. But these bicycle spokes were made similar to those.
Uh-huh.
And they tell me, I don't know this for a fact, but they say that when it was a rubber factory, they made heels, rubber heels, and they also made these bolts for atomizers. Now, that is just hearsay as far as I know. I mean, I was told that.
Do you know approximately when they went out of business? Which decade?
Well, the bicycle factory was still operating, of course, when I was a boy, so that would be operating, probably into 1920, 21, 19, early 1920s probably is when, I don't remember when it burned.
Oh, it burned down.
Yeah, it burned down. I don't remember. I know it burned one night, but I don't remember, because I was home at the time that it burned.
And they didn't reopen the business or anything.
They didn't rebuild at all there, you see.
Right.
All you see now is just the rock stone wall where it was.
Well, I'll have to take a look up.
It's all gone. But then going up Sulick Hill, the first house up there was a family by the name of Squares. There was a lady and her daughter. Mr. Squares was no longer living. The daughter was a librarian, I believe, in New York. She used to come up weekends and so forth. Lizzie Squares, everybody called her Lizzie. And I don't know how many years they were still there. Lizzie was still on that after I graduated from school and was living back at home again. But I don't know when she left. Of course, I was later. After 1945, I was in Sharon, so I kind of miss some of what went on after that in town. Beyond that, of course, is George Kiefer's, where George lived. Well, George Kiefer's house was my mother's family, the old Hollister family. And it goes back to, in fact, see, my grandfather, Charles Augustus Hollister, was there. My great-grandfather, Charles Augustus I, was there, and before him was the man who built the house. That funny names go for me. I should be reading, I suppose. Well,
I made a note of that. We'll
add
that.
Oh, Pierce.
What is it?
James Pierce. He's okay. The man that built the house.
Uh-huh.
And he would be my, let's see, great-great-great-grandfather, I believe.
James Pierce. So that we're talking about a family that came here when to Salisbury?
In the early, going back to the Hollister family, Isaac Hollister came from Glastonbury, Connecticut. That's where all the Hollisters came from. And that would be in the very early 1900s.
Mm-hmm. Came to Salisbury.
Uh-huh. And he had a son, Julius. In fact, I'll just ship up the Washington Street or Factory Street. There is a place up there that belonged to a man by the name of Decker. It's a house that's really under the road. The road goes up, you can see the roof of the house, and that was the Decker place. Now, Isaac and Julius Hollister, we have just, in fact, George Kiefer and George Kiefer is the one that found it for me. Isaac and Julius Hollister were gunsmiths and had a gun shop up there in that, where that house, they rented that house and they also rented the shop there. And they had, according to the town records, they had a trip hammer and gun shop there. How I got interested in it is through the Sharon Historical Society, because we have a gun collection over there that belonged originally to a Ned or Edward Hollister. And that got me interested, and so I started tracing it. And Edward Hollister, who originally owned the gun collection, was the son of an Egbert Hollister who lived in Great Barrington. And Egbert Hollister was the son of this Julius Hollister who had the gun shop. So putting two and two together, I surmise that probably some of the guns in the Sharon collection came from the old gun shop up here on Washington Street. But going beyond
Now just before we leave this, on your father's side, when did they come to Salisbury?
About my grandmother bought the house about 1860, around 1864. Uh-huh. They came from Northeast over in New York State, over here near Millerton.
What ethnic background were the two families?
Well,
what country did they come from?
Oh, they're both English.
Both from England.
Oh, yes.
Right, okay.
Scribner family, you can go back to, I can go back, in fact, I've gone back to Benjamin Scribner, who was the emigrant in Norwalk, Connecticut.
What year, approximately what?
In 16, well, we know, uh-huh. we don't have a record of his coming over because we can't find it. That's normal. But anyway, he was living in 1640s, 1650s in Glaston, in
Norwalk.
And some of the time he lived in Huntington, Long Island, because Huntington and Oyster Bay and that area were part of Connecticut at one time.
They were part of Connecticut?
They were part of the state of Connecticut, believe it or not.
Yes.
And then he was a weaver by trade, and he was given land in Huntington if he would stay 10 years there and weed for the people.
So they went by boat?
Yes, they went by boat and went across.
Uh-huh.
But eventually he went into Norwalk, and of course I can trace the family up from Norwalk. Charles Scribner and some of the publishers are off the same branch of the family. They're off another branch of it. I have it traced right through to my family, actually. And I did, and the Hollister is much easier because there is a Hollister genealogy which has been written. And that goes up to Julius, as far as Julius Hollister. And of course, from there on, I can come up to my mother. And, they, as I say, were English also. Original Hollister was Lieutenant John Hollister of Glastonbury, Connecticut. In fact, if you go down to Glastonbury today, the old house is still there, the original house of the family. Well, I won't say it's the original, but it dates back to the early 1700s. And the ferry that crosses the river there is called the Hollister Ferry because the Hollister family ran it for a while there. A lot of the English people, to trace them back to England, you can trace the families in England, but you can't trace their crossing necessarily, because a lot of these people really didn't have the money to pay for passage, and what they did, they acted as sailors.
Uh-huh.
On the ships coming across. So it's a great thing. There's a lot of books written. Houghton has written a lot of books which show the passenger ships and the passengers that were on these ships and so forth. But there's a lot of families that you cannot trace, actually, they're coming back. Now, going back to Sulick Hill, the Kiefer House, or the Hollister House, as I sometimes call it, was sold in 1901 to a Mrs. Bird from Great Barrington. Now, Mrs. Bird was in the family because she was a sister to my mother's mother, my grandmother, who was a Hollister. So there's wheels within wheels there. But anyway, she bought that house and lived there until she passed away, 1922. And she left the place to my mother. And then my mother sold it to Miss Leslie Emmett. Now, Miss Emmett was a sister to Mrs. Rand. And she was an artist also. And she did a lot of artwork until she passed away. And then it was sold to George Kiefer, bringing it up to date. There's another house up there belonging to Mrs. Potter, I believe, owns it now. It sits way up in back. And that was it belonged to a cousin of mine, Mrs. Helen Cushman, at the time when I was a little boy. Well, originally it belonged to a George Melvin, who was a painter. In fact, my father learned painting from him. And then the Cushman family moved in and bought it, and they lived there for quite a number of years. Later years, Mrs. Grant, you know Penny Grant?
Sure.
Well,
sure.
Penny Grant's family lived there.
Yes, I remember Penny telling me that.
Yeah, her mother, of course. Penny and I, when I was growing up, Penny and her sister Ellen were little girls. Yeah, but they lived up there for quite a while. I don't know all of the people who came after that. But our house was right next door. It's right next door there. And as I say, my grandmother had bought that house, and we lived there. Well, in fact, I sold the house eventually because my sister, my mother, of course, passed away some years ago, and then my sister passed away. And I finally had no use for keeping the house, so I sold it. And I tell you the truth, I don't know who lives there now. I have no idea.
Right. When you go up that hill on the right-hand side, the Hewitts have this big house.
Oh, yes.
Is that there was, a history to that one?
Oh, yes. That was my uncle's house. Uh-huh. We were mostly family on the hill. In those
so
days.
You had a large family
yeah.
here.
Well, that was the Sulick family. And James Sulick owned that, at the time when I was a boy, James Sulick owned that house. And his wife, Mary Sulick, was a Hollister. She was my mother's aunt. And yes, that was a big dairy farm. He had a big dairy farm. And he was a representative from the town of Salisbury for quite a number of years in Hartford. But he had this large dairy farm. He had about 1,000 acres, I believe. He went all the way from Lincoln City up to the top of Mount Regan. I can remember quite a bit about it. Of course, the house originally, before Don Hewitt had it, was more or less like the Kiefer's. It was one of those houses with a central chimney and three fireplaces around and so forth. And then he had a great big shed out in the back. I can remember that, out in the back of the house, where he kept his milk. Of course, he was a dairy farmer. and they had these milk cans that were in ice water up on a shelf along this shed. And some of those, they had a spigot at the bottom. You could run the milk off until you came to the cream. And that was the type of separator they had in those days. And of course, in the mornings, you'd see the wagons go down or the sleighs go down with the milk cans to the railroad station down here. And there was a milk train came through every day, twice a day, one in the morning and one at night. And he would ship out his milk that way. I remember years that we had Thanksgiving dinner up there. Aunt Mary Selleck was a great cook. Of course, she had all kinds. You wouldn't want to eat there today because there was butter and cream and everything else. But anyway,
cholesterol.
I can remember the Thanksgiving dinners that she had. They would be maybe 20 people. Different ones of the family, George Selleck and some of the others. And anyway, you always had turkey, chicken pie, pork roast, and kinds of sweet and white potatoes, and all kinds of vegetables, and all kinds of pies for dessert. Oh, gee, talk about a loaded table.
Yeah.
They had them in those days. There's another road that goes up beyond George Kiefer's. There's a little side road goes off to the right. You probably never noticed it particularly, but it goes up quite a ways off to the right. There's a house there on the left. I don't know who lives there now, but Mrs. Hall, who was a Selina Selleck, she lived there when my uncle had the farm. And across the road from it was the cider mill. It was a building, it was built like a barn, a rectangular barn. It had the first and second floor. And the first floor that was built like a huge trough, a wooden trough with a space at the end where the cider could run out, be caught in things. And through the center of the building was a great big steel screw, and it came down through the second floor, and there was like a capstan on the top. And what would happen, they would lay the apples, and I guess they used burlap, they used to use some kind of cloth, you would use in layers of the apples, chopped up apples. And then the men would go up to the second floor and they'd walk around and turn this screw down, and there was a big wooden piece over the top, and that's the way they would squeeze it. And I remember lots of times I was up there, a little boy, and we'd take a, when they were making cider, we'd take a straw, and we'd fly on our stomachs and suck the cider in as it came out. They had it was quite interesting because he had a horse motor there that I don't know if you've ever seen one.
I haven't, no.
They're like a treadmill.
Uh-huh.
And they're connected up to a big wheel that had a belt on it, belt drive. And they put the horse in this stage and the horse would walk, and that would and the treadmill would go around and run the wheel. And they used that with a chopper to chop up the apples. They used to use, I'm trying to think of the kind of, there was a particular kind of apple they used to use, and I can't think of it now. Because I know when I was a boy, we had an orchard below our house there. It belonged to Mrs. Bird, who owned the other place. And there were about 30 or 40 trees there.
Great. What kind of apples were growing around here?
Oh, northern spines. Sheep's nose and greenings, all kinds, mm-hmm. really. Russets were the ones that they used for cider.
What kind?
Russet.
Never heard of that.
Russet apple.
Oh, well, russet.
Russet.
Oh, okay.
You know.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we always had several barrels of apples that we put in the house every fall, late in the fall. But that past the old cider mill, there was a pond on the left, which was the ice pond where they used to get ice. And I know when I was a boy, going back to the Sulik place, they sold it to a Colonel Lansing finally. He was the one that, Lansings were the ones who rebuilt the whole house, rechanged everything there. They had three children. They had two boys and a girl. I think that the oldest boy is still living, Livingston Lansing, lives out in New York State somewhere. I used to see him once in a while. Billy, the second boy, was killed in the war. He was lost at sea. And the girl, I don't know what ever happened to her. She went with Howard Hughes for a while. He used to come up on an airplane to Lakeville Lake, take her back. And she ended up, she owned the property, I believe, in Bermuda. The family had property there, and she took that property and she moved out of here. So I don't know whatever happened to her. But what I was going to say is going back up to the Hewitt place and up that side road, there was this ice pond, and it was a boy that worked for Lansing's, or his father worked for Lansing's, and he and I used to go to school together, a fellow named Matheson, Walt Matheson, and we had a raft up on that pond, and we used to go up there, have a wonderful time in the summer. And beyond that, there used to be another farm. There was a farmhouse and barns and everything. They were all long since gone. But when I was a boy, there was a Bagani family, Italian family, who rented that, lived there. And they used to cut railroad ties. They cut the old chestnuts. The chestnuts were still good, sound. And they would cut the chestnuts, and they had a man there who would hew them. He'd straddle the logs and hew them out. Then down past George Keeper's there on the flat, they would pile them up. I remember them ranked up 12 feet high along there. And then later on, they would take them down to the railroad. And then later they used to cut witch hazel. That was another thing they did. There was a lot of witch hazel up in the woods there, and they would cut that. They cut the brush, and then chop it up and put it in, down here at the railroad station, put it in boxcars and send it away. And that's what they made the witch hazel of. Just trying to think of who. Well, as I say, that long has gone long ago. Above there, farther up the main road, there was a house, a Baganti lived there. And he had a small farm. And the house is gone now. It burned one night. It was vacant at the time, but it burned. And I think Mrs. Hamilton lives up there now. She built a house up in there. Then beyond that, at the end of the road, is the Petty, Julia Petty house. That's as far as you can go now. The road used to go up on the mountain. You used to be able to continue right on and go up to Mount Riga. You'd come out somewhere near the Mount Riga Cemetery.
And that's
but that road was closed. That's closed now. There's no bridges across the brook or anything, so that you can't go up. I went up there as a boy. I used to go up there a lot, but. And I don't think you can even walk. I don't think you can even walk up there very well now. It's probably a lot of trees down and everything. But I was going to say, in the winter time on Sulik Hill, the farmers used to do the plowing of the roads, and they had one of these big wooden V plows, made up homemade thing, and they'd hook the horses to it. Plow down to the street. And if the snow was too deep, they'd hook the oxen to it. Because horses won't go through snow if it's up near their bellies. They will not go. But oxen would, I think they'd go if it was over their head. I don't know. They'll do anything most. But anyway, they would clean off the roads, and of course that left a little snow on the bottom for their sleighs and everything. That would become glazed. And we had flexible flyer sleds in those days.
Oh, I remember.
I had, in fact, I still have one.
Yeah.
And we used to go up the hill there and come down, and we'd go so fast we'd end up here in Main Street.
Wow. Well, that was a good ride.
Oh, it was quite a ride. Didn't take long. But anyway, we had to put padding on our sleds because coming down, they were thanking us every little while, and we'd take off on those, just come down. I know when I was home, somebody coming down, I could hear them way up in the woods coming down, and they'd bang every time they went over one of those thank-you-mums. But that was a great sport in those days. The kids used to come up there weekends and slide down. That was, it was quite a thing. And you never had to worry. There were almost no automobiles in those days. You didn't worry about cars. You might get a horse and wagon, but you'd turn off of them. But it was a time of no cars.
As somebody mentioned in one interview, a legend of Ankrum Scream that they presumably heard on Sully Hill. Are you acquainted with that legend at all?
No.
No.
No, I'd be interested to know what that is. No, I don't.
No, we don't have enough information on it.
Oh.
We just mentioned it one time.
Ankrum Scream.
Yeah, that's what they call it, the Ankrum Scream. It reminded one of the Genesee Valley story, a similar story.
Yeah, my grandfather was in Ankrum at one time.
Uh-huh.
Lived in Ankrum. I was wondering. No, I don't know.
Don't know.
No.
Now, what if you went up to Mount Riga? Did you ever, did you have acquaintance with that area, you know, when you were growing up?
Very little. We walked up there sometimes, but nothing particular. I never did much of anything up on Mount Riga. I got stuck up there one time. I had a Model A Ford. And it was one Easter, I decided in the afternoon I'd been working on the car, and I'd take it for a ride. I went up to South Egremont and then turned off there and came up over the mountain. Boy, it was all mud. And I just dropped right out of sight. I had to leave the car there and walk home. And finally, there was a man, an Italian family, lived up on the mountain at that time. I knew them. He had a tractor, so he went up and pulled me out. But, well, of course, roads in those days were really something. Like even Main Street here in Salisbury, it was, in the spring, was nothing but mud. I can remember driving down with a horse and wagon. If my mother was with me, we had this, it was a wicker thing. It was sort of a quarter circle.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And you put it over the wheel so that when they got out, they wouldn't get their dress against the wheel. Yeah, that's the street here would be all mud in the spring. And Sully Hill, even the days after I had the Model A Ford, and that was after 1930, it was still a dirt road up there. And I get stuck once in a while and have to jack up the back of the car, throw stones under the wheels, get home.
Right.
That was the days we had no electricity up the hill at that time. Electricity didn't come up until the late 20s, I believe. We had a telephone, of course. It was the old, yes, it started that way. And then we had a regular phone. It wasn't dial, of course. It was you just lifted the receiver and you got the operator.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember the old, in the wintertime, the telephone poles, of course, they were all old chestnut poles in those days with cross arms, and they had iron wire on the two wires on the top, and they were iron wire. And on a windy day, how they would sing. You could hear those wires sing as you walked along the road. Yeah, our telephone was 109 ring 2. There were 12. There were 12 rings on that street. Of course, the telephone company at that time was in Lakeville. Was up, I don't know who has the building now. So as you go up the hill there, across from the old Winansko house, it's the last building there. Was the on the left was the old telephone office.
The Lincoln Hill Street?
No, this is down in Lakeville.
You say go up the hill.
Well, of course, Lakeville's another town. There's a lot of history in that town, too.
Right.
But as you go up at the end of the street, well, where the old Holly block was,
right. Yeah.
Then you go past that, and the last building up on the left was the old telephone office.
Right.
And that's where all your telephone calls originated. I don't know if we've covered all of Salisbury, most of it, I guess.
I see, yeah. One of the things I wanted to come back to was in one interview, someone also spoke about the blacks in town, but said they had difficulty getting their hair cut here, that they couldn't get their hair cut at the local barber shops.
That's news to me.
That's news to you, okay.
I don't know, but it's news to me. I never knew there was any feeling there.
I just picked that up. You mentioned several factories, and I presume, what was the major work? It was still farming, right, when you were growing up, or was it not?
Well, yes, but there were several factories running. The knife factory and the Holly Manufacturing Company, mm-hmm. of course, that was just about out of business. There was a man by the name of Shaw that worked there, and he did the sharpening and cleaning up of knives and things. He did beautiful work. But the knife handle factory up Washington Street, that's since gone. That is was running. That was running in my time. They made knife handles. They used primarily coca-bola wood or stag.
Or what?
Coca-bola
wood
or stag.
Uh-huh.
Stag horn, in other words.
Right.
Those were the two that they primarily made up there. Where the grist mill is up there, the old Sully grist mill.
Yeah.
While I'm on that subject, I might say that George's father, Albert, of course, was the one, George Albert, I believe his name was, but we called him Albert, and he ran the mill for a good many years. He was killed in the mill there. He got caught in one of the belts, and it carried him around, hit his head against one of the posts, and he was killed there. And George ran it for years after that, I guess up until the time George died, practically. I don't know if it was still running or not, but I used to take corn over there for the chickens and have it ground when I was a boy. And the knife handle factory was farther up. On the left-hand side, there's mm-hmm. a flat area there. It was a big factory there where they made the knife handles. That burned also. I can't tell you the year. I don't know
mm-hmm.
just what year it burned, but I know it did burn. And then, of course, Phil Warner started the Salisbury Artisans. You may be familiar with that. They made salad bowls and pepper mills and things of that type out of exotic woods. In fact, I have a few of their things at home now. Those were primarily the businesses, I believe, in the factories in Salisbury. I can just remember when the ore mine was still running. That was running in around 1920s, I guess. Mm-hmm. I remember going by with my father. We used to drive to Millerton sometimes in a horse and wagon. And I remember that was still running. But after that, I guess most of the factories closed down. Of course, there was the factory started up in Lakeville, that Kiffer and Essen, Essen.
What
across from, you know where the Holly block, Holly Manufacturing
right.
Company is, you know the building across from it.
Uh-huh.
And that was a factory. It was started making old plastic rulers and instruments of different kinds.
Uh-huh.
I believe that's closed now. I don't know.
I think it is closed, yeah.
Or that used to be the site of a Chinese laundry. When I was a boy, it was a Chinese laundry there.
Uh-huh.
Because Lakeville has changed.
What did you do for fun when you were growing up? What kind of games did you play? What was fun?
Well, we didn't really have too much. We played baseball. So I know I played baseball and I played football because we played, we started up a team in the grammar school up at, when I was on the Grove School, they started up a baseball team and we used to play Indian Mountain School. We used to go out and play with them. And we played football with them in the fall. We played baseball amongst ourselves sometimes. Other than that, I don't think we played too much. Of course, we didn't have a lot of time.
A lot of chores.
We had a lot to do after school and before school.
Right.
And then in the evenings at home, my mother was a great one to read to the family in the evening. We used to, after dinner at night, we used to sit in the dining room and mother would read, books like Deerslayer, all the books of that type. She read to the family nights. Of course, we didn't have radio, we didn't have television.
Right.
Because radio didn't come until about the early 1920s. I remember I used to build radio sets in right after my father died, 1922, I was building crystal sets and everything else. You know, that was the age of radio. Now there's so many things to watch. And of course, we went to the movies. We used to go to the theater. There were two theaters.
The Lakeville movie?
Yeah. Uh-huh. It was the best theater, or the one I was saying was across from the railroad station.
Yeah.
Ed Stewart ran that.
Yeah.
And then where the Chinese restaurant is now was a big grocery store, Robert's Store. It was a three-story building, and oddly enough, the theater was on the third floor. The first floor was groceries and all kinds of things.
You ever get over to the Lime Rock Theater, movie house?
Yes, I took tickets there at one time. That was the, McNeil House or something like that?
It became the Wallach House.
Wallach. In fact, the ticket window, I think, is still in that building.
Uh-huh.
As I recall it, last time I was in it, the ticket window was still there. But I remember taking tickets there when Ed Stewart was running it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, as I say, Roberts Hall, the second floor of Roberts Building was dentists, lawyers, offices. And I can remember the first floor, particularly the store there, where they had groceries and dry goods. And they were the first ones that I ever saw that had this system where you'd make out the bill, and you would, if you paid with more money than the bill came to, they put it in a little container and it went by a little trolley. I don't know what they call those systems.
I remember that.
But it had one of those systems there, and then it would come back. It was a
change-making
system there.
I know that.
It was quite a... Yeah, Lakeville was Lakeville was quite a place in those days too. There's a lot of changes there.
Yeah. Is there anything else on Salisbury that you can think of that we may not have covered?
Well, I might say that speaking of the where George Kiefer is, when my grandfather was there, he was a cabinet maker. And he had a water wheel. You can see where the water wheel was. There's no brook there now. The brook is gone. But apparently there was a brook that went down through there. And he had a water wheel. George knows where it is. He can see it there. And if you go up the back of George Kiefer's, you can see where there was a big brook at one time. It's all rock where the brook came down through. As they say, it's all gone. You go up to the end of it. And all you see at the end now is what we used to call a boiling spring.
There's boiling spring.
There's a spring up there, that boils up out of the ground, and it's all white sand. There used to be a barrel around it, and I know we used to go up there and have picnics when I was a little boy. And mother and family would go up there. It was a ice cold water comes up out of the ground there. And I think probably the water is way underground now. Of course, your water table has dropped so terrifically from what it used to be now up by my house. That brook was a fairly good-sized brook at one time. I used to fish in it, and I used to get beautiful trout there. Now, it's practically just a little stream, and that's all that's left. Then, of course, my mother used to tell me about the year they had the freshet. That was in the 1800s.
They had the what?
They had what they called a freshet.
Freshet.
The dam broke up at Mount Riga, and Salisbury was flooded. And I guess a lot of the brooks changed their courses at that time. And I have an idea, maybe that's when that brook went, but it's no longer there. Do you know a man by the name of Zaccheo? If you ever fell to Shannon, Zaccheo?
Zaccheo? No.
Yeah. I'm just curious because he went to school with me. He lives in Torrington, and he's about my age. He and I went to school together. His father was one of the best wood carvers and so forth that I've known. There's supposedly a mantelpiece at Don Hewitt's that this Zaccheo's father hand-carved. Well, because it said it had leaves and grapes and everything else carved in the wood. I've seen it when he was making it, but I've never seen it since it's been up there, so I don't know what it's like now. But why I mentioned Zaccheo is the fact that I happened to come in here one day, and what's her name was here? Moskowitz.
Oh, yeah. Jenny.
Jenny was here. And she called to me to come in. And this fellow Zaccheo was in with her, was telling her about some of the things. And gosh, we hadn't seen each other since we were kids.
She may have his phone number.
She might have it. Yeah. You can find it in the Torrington directory.
Yeah.
I think there's only one Zaccheo.
How do you spell it?
Z-A-C-C-E-O or something like that. I don't know exactly. I know he's, he's in the phone book.
All right, that
his first name is Feliciano.
Oh, okay. All right.
But you can tell him, you can mention my name if you talk with him.
Yeah, right.
Because he and I, we went to school together for many years. You probably have Jimmy DuBois up here.
Yeah.
Of course, Jimmy and I were in school together. So, well, I don't know.
Okay.
I haven't...
No, that was great. I mean...